Hello, everyone, and welcome back to episode 135 of the Sauvage and Craig Sports Podcast. Back for you here on another Wednesday night, 7:14 p.m. Pretty similar format show to last week, I'd say. Just a little, some basketball with hockey and a good amount of football. Before that, we'll start with moments of the week after I welcome in Ryan. Ryan, how are we doing on another lovely night like this as we're in spring now?
I'm doing well for that reason exactly. Weather's getting nicer. It's getting warmer outside. The snow, for the most part, is gone. Hopefully, we're not going to get hit with another, you know, big snowstorm. But other than that, doing well, in a better spot than it was, of course, last week, with last week being coined by me the panic episode with all the, you know, questions about panic with the Celtics, the Bruins, and the Patriots. Bruins have 100% cleared that up. If anyone was panicking about them, I don't think people were. But like I said, that was the theme for me last week. Celtics, kind of hit or miss. We'll get into them. And then, of course, the Patriots. They're doing some things. Of course, they like to do things when we, you know, are off the air for about 10 seconds, it seems like. And then they go out and make some free agent moves. Like I told you before we started the show, you know, if a trade is to be made for like a DeAndre Hopkins or something, we fully expect it to happen like 2 minutes after we, you know, close things down and get off our laptop. So hopefully we'll have something to talk about with them, some breaking stuff. But other than that, pretty good. No complaints.
Yeah, I mean, probably will happen knowing our luck. Yeah. But we'll start with moments of the week. I feel like I want a streak with these of quick ones, but I think the complaining about sportsbook ads, namely from Dan Shaughnessy sparking this, is so dumb. It became legal just less than 2 weeks ago. There's going to be a lot of ads. I would rather see these than more of the terrible ads we see on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. And, people are just like overreacting, and I don't know. I kind of enjoy seeing Kay Adams on my TV screen, cell phone. So
yeah, I don't hate that one. I don't want to say I can see where he's coming from, because I'm with you. I think it's kind of dumb just to be clean. Like, there are times where it seems like it's every other commercial, it feels like, is a sports betting commercial. But like you said, it makes sense. It just became legal. They're going to try to push it as much as they possibly can. The one I'm just completely tired of is it Lenny Clark, the comedian? The one where he's doing the wicked annoying Boston accent. Like, I get that's the point of the commercial, is doing the over-the-top Boston accent. But that one, for some reason, after seeing it so many times, has just annoyed the crap out of me. Other than that, like, I'm with you. I could care less, really, because it makes sense why there's a lot of them out there. Obviously, these brands or groups of, you know, betting things are trying to push their services onto people. So you're going to see a lot of them, and it makes sense. So complaining about it is, again, just in Dan Shaughnessy's case, old man shouting at the clouds type of thing.
Yeah, pretty nonsensical to me. Don't really see the point in wasting energy on it. For your moment of the week, though, you have your Cliff Notes version of the World Baseball Classic.
Yeah, I tried to jumble my thoughts all together as good as I could. Obviously, to start, congratulations to Team Japan. If there's any, you know, Japanese followers that are listening to us or anything like that, obviously, congratulations there. You know, that team ends up being a wagon, goes undefeated to win their third WBC championship. I don't think any team has more than two. Obviously, Japan was that team going into last night. The championship game was a little anticlimactic, especially after you had the two, the USA and Cuba game, the Mexico and Japan game, how electric those were. Obviously, the WBC has caught a lot of eyes because of the great play, because of the great stories. You know, the great players and everything like that. It obviously caught some bad rep from certain people with the injuries to Edwin Diaz and Jose Altuve. I guess I'll address that to start, because we haven't really been on air or talked about it since, you know, the Diaz injury happened, or, you know, the Altuve with the fractured thumb. Edwin Diaz obviously done for the season with a patellar tendon tear. Obviously, two freak accidents that sucks to have happen. Diaz, of course, tears his patellar tendon celebrating. Altuve, this one, like, I think of it less as a freak injury, because you could have saw, you know, Altuve get hit on the thumb in a spring training game and it would have broke it there. So the people that are, you know, calling for the WBC to not happen, or some of the people that think they should go the route of sending, you know, amateur players over there, or minor leaguers or college players or whatever, like, this shit like this happens. Like, it's not unavoidable, but like, you get where I'm coming from here. So the people that were crying about that, like, if you want to sit there and watch, you know, Johnny No Name playing a spring training game that means absolutely nothing and watch that baseball, then power to you. Like, I would much rather watch, you know, these guys come out, obviously play for their country and, you know, play with some fire in the end of March instead of, you know, again, watching a meaningless spring training game that guys are trying to gear up for the season four. So I enjoyed it. I'm sure a lot of people enjoyed it. I don't know how much you caught of it. But overall, thought it was a great WBC. Like I said, the championship game last night from a U.S. fan standpoint stunk because you're obviously rooting for Team USA. And the game itself was a little boring at times with it being a low scoring game. You did get a great moment at the end with Ohtani facing Trout. Again, everyone's saying, you know, such an epic at bat that was. I would have liked to have, you know, seen Trout maybe foul some pitches off, like make it a 10, 15 pitch at bat, really go at it with Ohtani, but Ohtani ends up striking him out in the end. Overall, like I said, great experience to watch. I'm sure it was an even better experience for those guys to play in. But I don't know if you had any kind of thoughts on the World Baseball Classic. I don't know how much of it you ended up catching.
I caught none of it besides Twitter.
Fair enough.
Hero, greatest American ever. Kyle Schwarber hit a home run last night, though, which is unsurprising. He always
not in the slightest.
Yep. Plays. My biggest takeaway is I'm very surprised at the viewership. Not that I expected it to be like terrible, but it really like shattered any expectations by a mile that I ever.
Yeah, it was astronomical. Mm-hmm.
It is like amongst the craziest viewership I've ever seen for a sporting event. So, I mean, I wouldn't say I underestimated the World Baseball Classic because I didn't really have any specific expectations. But if I were to have had specific expectations, they were blown by these viewership numbers. Pretty nuts. Mm-hmm. Turns out the World Baseball Classic is pretty popular.
Yeah, I would say so. Like, again, for the people that say like it's not worth it or, you know, people aren't tuning in, there are plenty of things to show you that that is completely false. And again, like you said, the viewership was so high. I think this World Baseball Classic, especially, you had a ton of great storylines. Like the Czech Republic team that's basically made up of like plumbers and teachers and stuff came out and put together some pretty competitive games. You had first time teams like the Czech Republic, like I said, Great Britain, Nicaragua. They all, you know, competed for the most part. So that was kind of cool to see. You know, you have guys, like you said, Kyle Schwarber, who's a household name, step up in big moments. Randy Arozarena continues to be, you know, a massive player on a huge stage. He had a great tournament. Trey Turner became an American hero with how well he played in this. You got to see, you know, the Japanese players, you know, their side of it. Munetaka Murakami, who won the Triple Crown last year in Japan. He played well in big moments. Obviously, Shohei, you got to see 21-year-old phenom Roki Sasaki, who's, like I said, 21 and can throw 102 already. Like, that's good luck when he becomes available and to any team wanting to go get him. Like, that'll be a fun story to watch. So there was a lot to obviously look forward to and watch. And again, I enjoyed it. I'm sure a lot of baseball fans enjoyed it. Obviously, like you said, with the viewership being as huge as it was, people did. And obviously just can't wait for the next one when that comes, I think in 2026, I think it is. Maybe 2025. I can't remember what Rob Manfred said the other day when he announced it was coming back. But all in all, great tournament. Yeah, it stunk with the Diaz and Altuve injuries, but that, again, two freak things that, you know, Diaz could have tore his patellar tendon walking out of the dugout. Like, so it sucks. Yeah. But again, like, the Mets season isn't over. The Astros will be fine. You know, they'll survive not having Altuve. So the people that, again, were complaining about how dumb the tournament was just because of those two freak injuries, like, again, go enjoy watching a bunch of no names play in spring training games this late in the season, because that's what's going on.
Yeah. It was so popular that it's got Connor McDavid talking, you know, good for the face of the franchise, and the NHL vouching for the best of the best, which is returning in 2024 with the World Cup coming back. I think that's still the plan. I haven't heard anything otherwise. So that'll be exciting. And yeah, one of my biggest takeaways too is just, yeah, Murakami and Sasaki are going to be superstars and not too long coming from overseas to the MLB because they're both just ridiculous. Still very young. So that's going to be exciting. But yeah, I mean, I'll definitely be more tuned in 2026. So, I mean,
good. I'm glad you have an open mind to it. That's what I think we just need more. I mean, like,
it seems more exciting than your average baseball game by a long shot. So, I mean, that's a good starting point for me to begin with. So, the World Baseball Classic, shout out to Japan. It was cool to see Ohtani and Trout face off as well. But yeah, that's moments of the week. We will get to hockey and basketball before we get to the more drawn out football stuff. I feel like, you know, get those out of the way and save the bulk of the show for last.
Sure.
So let's start with some Bruins. It's kind of, you know, after when trade rumors dying down these last few weeks with the trade deadline being passed, it's really just, you know, talking about the state of the team. And thought to myself when they lost a couple. You know, that tough Chicago loss, lost to Detroit. Now they're just going to go on a huge winning streak, and it looks like that might be the case because they're already on a four-game winning streak, starting with Winnipeg on Steve Austin Day, 3/16. Jeremy Swayman, 36 save shutout. One thing I've noticed from Tyler Bertuzzi, I haven't been overall super impressed with him so far, but he makes fairly difficult passes look very easy, and he gets them off quick. Mm-hmm. He gets one to Frederick here. Pavel Zacha scores on a snipe. Good, clean 3-0 win for the Bruins. Like to see that. You know, you're playing a better team than Chicago. You step up to the plate on the road. Minnesota, 2 days later, 5-2 victory. A lot of us out there, including myself, were celebrating during the game, so didn't see it, super intently the whole game, but pretty solid games. Omar played pretty good. Marcus Johansson was on kind of a war path. He scores early. I believe he had another one called back. He had an assist. He unintentionally scored for Krejci. He had some scoring chances. He was buzzing. David Pastrnak scored number 47. They just gave him too much time, and he made it hurt. Like I said, Krejci boinked one off of Johansson's stick. I thought McAvoy got it there first, but they gave it to Krejci. Didn't actually end up touching McAvoy's stick. Sundqvist scores in the third period for Minnesota, but it wasn't enough. Bergeron to Frederick put fourth and fifth goals on the board to put the game out of reach. Trent Frederick is heating up lately big time, as is Jake DeBrusque, we'll get to. And then you get a back-to-back, which is never fun. But I suppose back-to-backs are more fun when you win 7-0 in the second half.
I'd say so, yeah.
14-1 is what they have outscored the Buffalo Sabres by in the last two matchups. Another shutout for Jeremy Swayman, two in a row. I bet Bergeron to score first, so thank you for the $70 I won.
Freeze Bergeron.
And even more reason to love the guy. Garnet Hathaway sniped, didn't expect to see that. But he's just continues to play well. Zboril gets in the lineup and honestly looked pretty solid in this game. Was really pleased to see that. It must have been tough to dust off the cobwebs a little bit, but, he's trying to prove himself. Starts a nice sequence that leads to DeBrusque goal. Great feed from Coyle. Speaking of DeBrusque, he takes it all by himself behind the net, creates a passing lane for himself to find Lindholm, 4-0. 48 for Pastrnak, just too easy for him on that one. And the last two goals were honestly sad. What has happened to the Sabres is astonishing because they haven't been to the playoffs since 2008. And for the last 13 or 14 games, I think they've won two of them still.
Jesus.
And they are dead. I have never seen a team give up like the Sabres have. You think they'd have more motivation trying to get back to the playoffs and, seeing the fruits of their labor pay off with this young core starting to materialize and Tage Thompson scoring freaking 45 goals. I have never seen a team give up like this. It's really astonishing. It's those last two goals were you're just coasting around waiting for the game to end when you're up 11-0 against a team in youth hockey. And mm-hmm. You're just scoring goals and you're not even getting that excited because it's the 11th goal of the game and, sportsmanship. The Sabres have completely given up. I don't know if you noticed that as well, but I think it was pretty apparent.
Towards the end, yeah. I think if this was, I'm trying to remember what the 19th was. That was probably a Thursday, right? It was probably getting ready. It was the 19th. I mean, the 19th was a Sunday. I don't know what I was doing.
Sunday.
Oh, yeah. We went to go see Creed. So I missed kind of the end of it, but saw a little bit of it. I saw those last couple of goals. It's kind of the same thing. Watching it on replay, they just didn't. At that point, didn't want to be there. I was going to say maybe the fact that, like you said, they've been outscored 14-1. It just kind of finally set in where it's all right, we can't beat this team. F it. Let's just get to the end of the game and kind of move on from there. But
yeah,
I don't know. We've talked about we've talked about Buffalo before. We kind of give the same spiel about them every year when we do our prediction stuff. They're a team. I can't remember how well if they started off well this year or not. But start off decent, fall off dramatically towards the end of the season. It seems like that's just something that's kind of in this team's DNA. But like you said, it is a little surprising with, the youth and the talent they have on that team that you would think being as close as they maybe were in a while to a playoff berth, they maybe want to be in a little bit more. So it is a little bizarre with how drastic they've fallen off.
Yeah, I mean, they got smoked by the Predators last night too. They're rolling over and dying. And just it's
packing
really
it in, yeah.
Because they had a chance. They you know, be in a position like Ottawa if Ottawa weren't losing a bunch of games lately all of a sudden. And speaking of Ottawa, you saw a team last night that's kind of in a similar position to Buffalo, but, you know, put up a better effort last night, I'd say for sure. Ullmark made 40 saves on 41 shots in this 2-1 win, fourth in a row for the Bruins. Dylan Gambrell scores early, throws Ullmark off a little bit, I think, with the wraparound. Krejci getting down and dirty in front of the net, rumbles and tumbles for number 15. The pass from Marchand to DeBrusque was just sick. Marchand's known for being a pretty solid passer, but I haven't seen a pass like that from Marchand all season. That was just, like, completely ridiculous. DeBrusque has 3 goals, 3 assists, and 6 points his last 3 games now. And, Ottawa, you know, they're playing harder than a team like Buffalo, but they won on this win streak, probably around, like, an eight-game win streak, or, like, 8 of 10 or something. Pretty recently, now they've lost 6 of 7 when they're trying to catch up to teams like Pittsburgh and the Panthers and the Islanders and Buffalo. Sucks. It's just the winning ways are not picking up.
Mm-hmm.
It's like must win territory big time for them, and they can't figure it out right now. And
mm-hmm.
you know, I think for a team like them, they've earned it more than Buffalo with the way they've been playing lately, at least like hanging in these games some more, but it just hasn't worked lately. 6 of 7 down in the L column for the Senators. But that wild card 2 spot in the East will be forever changing as we
just a revolving door. Yeah.
Yeah. Like Pittsburgh has a chance to get back in that second wild card spot tonight if they beat Colorado. So we'll see what happens there. Next up for the Bruins, a big Eastern Conference swing until Nashville comes to town. They got Montreal tomorrow night. Last in the Atlantic, 62 points. Just a measly 55 points from Nick Suzuki as their leading scorer. Another disappointing season for them. Tampa Bay, 2 days later, got Nikita Kucherov and the Lightning coming to town. They are third in the Atlantic with 90 points. Kucherov has hit the 100-point plateau for, I believe, the third or fourth time in his career. He's got 28 goals, 72 assists, and 100 points in 72 games. Then he traveled to Carolina. I feel like when was the last time they played in Carolina? I feel like it's been a while. Carolina's 46-15-8, the only other 100-point team, to my knowledge, in the league. They're first in the Metro. Marty Nechas. I never know whether it's Nechas or Nechas. I hear Nekas. Different pronunciation. It looks like Nekas.
Definitely not that.
Yeah, but it's not, unfortunately. That would be easier. 64 points in 69 games for him. This is the Andrei Svechnikov-less Carolina Hurricanes. For the rest
I was just
going to
ask that. I remember seeing they lost somebody big, but I couldn't remember who or the name was. But
yeah,
it's a big loss right around this time.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, Svechnikov's done, torn ACL. Who knows with Pacioretty when he comes back if he'll be 100%. Guy's dealt with a lot of injury troubles over these last few years. Then you get Roman Josi and the Predators coming to town. Predators, despite selling off some pieces, surprisingly in the playoff mix a little bit there in the West. So this is an important game for them if they want to make the playoffs. They are fifth in the Central right now. Roman Josi, as expected, is leading them on the score sheet. He's got 18 goals, 41 assists, and 59 points in 67 games. It's a decent stretch of games coming up for the Bruins. You got Carolina, who's always tough, played the Bruins tough in the playoffs last year. Tampa, you know, Bruins have leapfrogged Tampa a little bit and like contender status in the East, but you know, still always tough against Tampa. And then Nashville, you know, they're playing for something. Montreal, I don't see them having much of a problem with Montreal at home.
No,
so
trap game there?
No, I don't think so. Especially okay. In the middle of a winning streak. You know, maybe if they had lost to Buffalo or Ottawa rather.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, but I don't know. I think they're good. And yeah, you're just trying to stay fresh. Rest some guys and finish out the regular season. They did a little load management with Krejci the other day against Buffalo. He was banged up a little bit, but I think they, you know, kind of cluing out. It was mainly load management for him. Orlov looked like it was going to be load management for him, but he came out of the rotation. This is one thing I wanted to talk about. Mm-hmm.
Good. I was going to ask you about it.
I don't really like the Orlov out of the rotation thing because he's your new guy. You should be playing him every game.
You'd like him, yeah. Yep.
I don't understand.
Like him to get the familiarity with guys. Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense, but.
But now I think we're gonna, you know, see things come into play a little bit more in terms of solidifying the picture with Derek Forbert, unfortunately, out for the regular season. Maybe we'll see Saboro like once or twice more, but I think, you know, the six outside of Forbert that we're used to for the most part is going to be the six late in the regular season and maybe into the playoffs. Hopefully with Forbert's recovery, he can be 100% once playoffs come around, but that remains to be seen. Where are you at? Are you in kind of the same camp? Or are you okay with them, you know, keeping the rotation going with Orlov? Because I just don't really get it. Let him build his chemistry.
No, yeah, I'd ride it out with him. Like, let him just maybe switch his pairings night after night, but, like, definitely don't take him out of the lineup fully. Like, this is a guy that, again, I'm sure he's fully comfortable with everybody at this point. He's been here for a while now, but, like, just keep building that familiarity with guys. Like I said, maybe change up the lineup a little bit, just who he's playing with to get even more familiarity. But, like you said, it sucks that Forbert's out, but it does make it easier moving forward now. You don't have to, I feel like, rely on who's going to play night in and night out. So makes it easier, but yeah, I'm with you. Like stick with Orlov in the lineup. If you have to move some minor guys in and out of it, like if you have to take Clifton out every once in a while, or like you said, Zboril, I'm fine with that. Don't move one of your big guys that you obviously gave up some capital to get. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Yeah. And one other lineup note, keep Jakub Lauko in at this point.
What was the deal with him last night? I heard he just didn't. He's not playing at the end of the game or something. I thought he had it from what I saw or what I on Twitter. Because again, I was trying to watch the baseball game at work more so than anything else. Did he get like benched or something halfway through the game? I thought he was having a decent game.
I didn't really even pick up on that. I guess I wasn't paying attention enough. But I think the back check him and DeBrusque had just shows how much of a motor he has. And it's going to be tough to make room for him in the lineup when, you know, Hall and Foligno are back. Hall's back in a non-contact sweater. Foligno skated before practice yesterday. I don't know. I'd like to see them find room for him whenever they can. So
he has looked good when he's in there. Absolutely. He looks like a guy that like is hungry, obviously, for a chance and wants to, you know, go out and maybe not prove some people wrong. Cause I don't know if there's like doubters about him, but you know what I'm getting at? Like a guy that obviously wants to show out when he's in the lineup.
Yeah, and he jokes around on Twitter too. He did the Grandpa Simpson revolving door with all the paper transactions. He's always moving up and down on emergency loans, which is, you know, of course, thankfully for him, not him traveling back and forth to all these places all over again, over and over again, rather. Yeah, I mean, he deserves to be in the lineup every night as long as they have some injuries on the left side. And I don't know why anybody would say otherwise, because he's playing good. He had that game against Buffalo a couple weeks ago. He scored two goals. Like, he's hungry. So let him prove himself.
Let him eat.
Exactly. It goes right in hand in hand. I think that's going to wrap it up for Bruins, though. They just keep winning. Not a whole lot of negative to talk about, but we touched on a couple talking points that, you know, we'd like to, you know, change. But on to the Celtics, who are going to have some more negative things for us to talk about, but not all negative things. They're perplexing us a little bit.
They're still in limbo to me. They don't make a lot of sense. I mean, you watch, again, I don't know how, with the Bruins on, I don't know how much of the game you caught the other night. Okay, that's figures. But they're just so perplexing. Like last night against, well, we'll start with the more recent game, the Sacramento one, work backwards. Watching the game, you know, listening to people, you know, during the post game, you know, talk about it. Halftime, Scal talked about it. Eddie Howe said it. Looked like the Celtics' best game they've played in a long time. Definitely their best game coming out of the All-Star break. And again, it plays into the, you play up to your competition or play equal to your competition in Sacramento, who I think was the 2 seed in the West going into that game. I think they've since fallen to the 3, or they were the 3, maybe they fell to the 4. Regardless, a team that's going to be in the playoffs that has surprised a lot of people and played really well this season. They played excellent against Sacramento. You know, they took every punch the Kings gave them and fired right back. Celtics end the game with 33 assists and just 5 turnovers. They had 2 going into the fourth quarter. That's a huge turnaround, obviously, from the Utah game a couple nights before that. They forced 14 turnovers against a very good Sacramento offense. This is the team you'd like to see play. You know, you get Rob Williams back. He played well in, you know, the sparingly minutes that he played, just the 21 of them. Did look a little rusty at times, but again, you listen to Jaylen Brown after the game. He was asked about it. He said, you know, he was a good shot in the arm. I'm paraphrasing, obviously, but, you know, they like his energy out there. He brings an energy with him, which I do agree with that. But like at this point, it's like, okay, every time Rob Williams leaves the lineup, you know, why does his team have to get down about that? Like, shouldn't you just kind of keep the energy up, whether he's in there or not? Like, I get what he brings to the table. I get he obviously changes their offense and defense. And you obviously want a guy like that on the floor. But just for me personally, I'm a little tired of that. You know, when Rob's out, the team's down. When he's in there, they get a boost. Like, you should just be playing fully and entirely like that. My biggest takeaway from the game, something that stood out to me, Joe Mazzulla, he ended up shortening the rotation to what ultimately is going to be a playoff-like rotation. The only bench players that play in the game and play meaningful minutes before garbage time, of course, were Rob Williams, Grant Williams, Derek White, and Brogdon. Maybe mixing Hauser here and there, but like that's what they should be going with, at least in my opinion. If everyone's healthy and ready to go, like at this point in the season, you should be trying to figure out what your playoff rotation is going to look like. That's the one that makes the most sense. You've seen Grant Williams kind of come back to life a little bit of late. You know, obviously minus the end of that Utah game where he tries to go up for a layup against 2 7-footers, which didn't make a ton of sense. Tatum looked great. You know, he looked aggressive. It's something that we've talked about before. You want to see more out of Tatum. If, you know, his 3-point shot's not falling, go to the basket, be aggressive. I think he did that a lot last night. Obviously, you got another great performance from Jaylen Brown. Like, this is the team that you want to see out there, and this is the team that you've seen in the past, and that's what's so frustrating about him. And again, Brown said it at the end of the game too, where he basically said, like, this is the team that, you know, I'm used to seeing. You know, we obviously need to get up for these games, and we do that. Like, I like hearing that, but also, again, like, it pisses you off because the team obviously knows that they play down to their competition, so you think at this point in the season with 9 games left to go, this is something they'd be able to fix. And that's what's so frustrating. What was so frustrating about that Utah game is you saw the same kind of problems they've had in the past. You saw late in the game, Joe Mazzulla, we talked about it before, kind of in over his head, doesn't play Derek White in the fourth quarter of that game, which was crazy because Marcus Smart didn't play. So it's not like they were, you know, going at it for minutes or anything. The last play, again, Grant Williams going for a layup, not the best call there. And Jaylen Brown, I think the tweet I saw was, didn't touch the ball at all for the final 120 of the fourth quarter in that game after he was probably your best player all night long. So you've seen some positive, you've seen some negatives. Again, it's good that they get up and play these tough games against Sacramento, these playoff-like games. But then when you have a team like Utah come in that has had a good season for where, you know, they were predicted to be, you should be able to beat them. It's kind of where you're at with this team right now. Just like I said, kind of in a basketball limbo where like they should be playing up to their standards. And from time to time, again, they just kind of fall off a little bit, which has been so frustrating with them.
Yeah, this is not something that I like foresaw like happening with the team, but this is something in the back of your mind. I feel like as someone who follows a team with a new coach, you had to kind of like worry about a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Because inexperience, figured things out late in the season, preparing for playoffs, combination of things. But I don't know. I'm getting closer to worrying. I'm still not there
yet. Okay, fair enough.
I'm still waiting for us to get to the playoffs and just kind of like a switch to be flipped and, you know, back to normal. Hopefully Rob Williams is healthy too. That would be sick.
Yep. Yeah, because if he's healthy, you saw it last night. They go.
Yeah, I'm in a weird spot with this team. That's
I think I've been for
a little while, but it's different now than it has.
It's now more teetering down than it was last week. But like, I mean, I can't remember who it was. I think it was Zolak and Bertrand talking about it, and it might have been Paul Pierce that they said brought it up that, you know, maybe the Celtics are getting bored with, you know, obviously the success they've had towards the end of the season. You're gearing up for the playoffs. Like some of these games, you're just not getting up for. Cause like, oh, you're playing Utah. Like, all right, we'll try to cope. But again, like I hate that mentality. Again, you should be able to go out there and beat these teams. You should play every game, especially going into the playoff. Like you don't want to go, I've said it before. You don't want to go limping into the playoffs. Like You have teams like Milwaukee that are playing well, Philly's playing well. You know, they've kind of missed a couple here and there. Obviously teams you've had success in the past against, and you're going to see down the stretch here, the Milwaukee game coming up on the 30th of this month. That'll be for the season series. Might determine the one seed with, you know, how things end up. You get Philadelphia again one more time, who you've dominated, but, you know, they might have the MVP of the league on their team and Embiid. So again, a game you can't really take all that lightly. Like, again, there was a lot to like from last night's game. They did a lot of things right that they did wrong in the Utah game, but can you trust them moving forward? Like, you look at the schedule that remains. I think the broadcast last night had the Celtics, you know, their strength of schedule ranked 11th, so kind of right in the middle of the pack towards the end of the season. Remaining schedule, they have home against Indiana on the 24th, home against San Antonio on the 26th, at Washington on the 28th, at Milwaukee again. That game's going to be big on the 30th. Second night of a back-to-back against Utah on the 31st at home, at Philadelphia on the 4th, back-to-back against Toronto on the 5th at home. They play Toronto again on the 7th at home, and then they finish out the year at home against Atlanta. You know, look at those teams. Celtics 1-1 against the Pacers, 1-0 against the Spurs, 2-0 against Washington, 1-1 against Milwaukee, 0-1 against Utah. They're 3-0 against Philly, 2-0 against Toronto, and 2-0 against Atlanta. Realistically, again, with how the Celtics play, you may drop one or two of those games because you don't get up for them. Like, you should be able to go 7-2 down the stretch. Shit, again, with the quality of teams you're playing, you should be able to go 8-1. Like, you maybe lose that Milwaukee game in Milwaukee. Maybe you drop the second game at Toronto or one of these back-to-backs the second night of them. You should be able to beat these teams down the stretch. You should be able to go into the playoffs on a pretty big high note, unless you want to start maybe, going the route of the Bruins and resting some guys here and there. But again, very winnable games coming up. You'd like to see him take the mentality from the Sacramento games, keep this playoff mentality moving forward, and, not fall asleep against some of these bad teams like Indiana and San Antonio. And even Toronto's not had a great year, but I don't know. It's very frustrating with them right now. I think a lot of Celtics fans kind of echo the same point. You are obviously, like you said, more on the worrying side now. Because again, you talk about the Bruins, there's not a lot negative to talk about with them because they played so well and haven't really given you anything to worry about. The Celtics, on the other hand, it seems like just kind of flip a switch here and there, depending on how they want to play. So that's what's been frustrating. We've talked about that obviously the last couple of weeks, but like I said, the Sacramento game, there was some positives and hopefully they can take those moving forward.
I agree. Yeah, I mean, what is it, 9 games left? So we will see what happens with the C's. Hopefully we can turn it around. Onto football, and we have some unfortunate, surprising news to start football.
Oh, no.
Vegas Raiders tight end Foster Moreau found out today he was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma and will be stepping away from football. He capped off a thread of tweets saying, "That being said, I'll go kick this thing's ass and get back to doing what I love, AMDG. I'm not sure what that stands for, but maybe it's like some sort of motto for the Raiders. I'm not sure. But yeah, pretty crap news for Foster Moreau. Like, it's, dealing with the free agent status of finding, his next home. I believe he's a free agent right now. And then has cancer dropped on him. So
not great.
Yeah, we want to wish him the best, of course. Let me check before we get into the rest. I think, yeah, he is a free agent. So a lot of uncertainty. Maybe he returns to the Raiders at some point once he's back. Maybe he doesn't. But he's got a bigger battle right now than anything on the football field. So wishing Foster Moreau the best. Some pretty tough news to stumble upon when I just refreshed my Twitter. So I wanted to bring that up. Pretty shitty development, but hoping for
the best. Not great, but like you said, obviously you hope for the best and a speedy recovery, and then like he said, can go back to playing football and obviously doing something that brings him a ton of enjoyment.
Yep, for sure. To the Patriots though, most recently, internally, they signed Daniel Aquale to a 2-year deal, Mac Wilson to a 1-year deal, and made Joe Cardona the highest paid long snapper in the NFL. 4 years, 6.3 with up to 6.7 in incentives, a $1 million signing bonus, and $2.6 million fully guaranteed. Bill Belichick likes his long snappers. That's all I can really say. And it's cheap for Aquale, but I don't really get what they see in Daniel Aquale. I'm not really a huge fan of his. Don't think he really does a ton, but the Mac Wilson deal is a steal. It wasn't amazing this past year, but had some moments. So, if you're going to get it for $2.2 million, go ahead and do it. And they brought Jalen Mills back. I don't know. I kind of feel like, was Jalen Mills a free agent before? I thought he was, but he must have not.
No, they released him, and then because he had 2 more years left on that 4-year contract he signed, and then released him. Did the typical Patriots pay you less money to come back, and everything worked out in the end there.
Yeah, so they'll bring Jalen Mills back. Whether he plays safety or corner remains to be seen, but we'll see what happens with him. Should be interesting to see his usage. How do we feel about these little internal additions?
I'm with you. The Uquale move doesn't obviously light a fire under you, but again, seems like it's a Bill Belichick guy. They seem to like what he does. They obviously know more football than we do and know more about the player. So I guess if you want to keep resigning him, all the power to you. Mac Wilson had some moments here and there. So I'm not, you know, high or low on that one. Listen, I like Joe Cardona. I'm sure you like Joe Cardona. I'm sure a lot of fans like Joe Cardona. But, you know, what are we doing giving a long snapper the highest contract ever? And, like, again, there's I said it last week. There's so many questions surrounding this team. Like, this is a guy that I can't imagine was going to get a massive contract from anywhere else. A guy you could have probably just re-signed for pennies on the dollar. Again, great guy, you know, for what he does, obviously, with, you know, the military and everything like that. And obviously a guy that's been a Patriot and probably going to be a Patriot for life now. I get they like him. I don't like him for $6.7 million with incentives that, you know, could get him more money. Like, and then they go out and we'll get to a little in probably a second here, go out and sign another primary special teams guy for just under $7 million. So, like, you have these other holes you could be filling up and these other positions you could be upgrading at, you know, to spend some legitimate money. I don't think paying the long snapper and a special teams linebacker, both just under $7 million, is the, you know, right direction it should be going in. Again, they know more football than I do, so maybe they're onto something there with paying these guys, but that to me screams like a massive overpay. The Mills thing, like, I texted you when it happened, like, so long, thanks for nothing, when they released him, and then they obviously bring him back. It looks like you said, what's up?
6.1.
Yeah, again, that's kind of pricey, but I guess that's the market for him. It looks like they are going to probably play him more at safety, or he said himself, I think, that he's going to move back to safety. Had some success there with the Eagles in 2020. The Jordan Schultz tweet said, 2020 with the Eagles, Mills had 74 tackles, 4 tackles for losses, 1.5 sacks, and 1 pick at free safety. Obviously, he's played corner in his 2 years with the Patriots, so maybe, you know, you'll see a little bit more out of him from the safety position. They're deep there. I'll give him credit for that. You know, obviously Mills, Peppers, Joshua Bledsoe, you know, does he get a crack? Who knows? Duggar, Phillips. What does that do for him at corner, though? You know, you have the three Joneses and then Miles Bryant and Sean Wade. So you're pretty deep at free safety and strong safety, but you're maybe a little thin at corner, depending on how you look at, you know, the top three guys. Be interesting to see what they do there. Maybe they'll target one in the draft, but overall, not too high on these moves, not too low, because they're just kind of middling moves to me again. Like, you're not really improving all that much. You're kind of still just moving in that sideways line that we talked about last week.
Yeah, my takeaway, too, with the Mill stuff is I would have hoped it would be Taylor Rapp who's been visiting. So,
yep, that would have been like that.
Maybe just one. But, yeah, the guy you were alluding to was Chris Board. Belichick said he was the best special teams player they played all season this past year. So,
of course, that's what Bill's looking at.
He just wants to assemble the super special teams unit. Can't fault him for that, but yeah, the money is a little tough to look at when he still could definitely use another receiver amongst, you know, maybe some corner help, but there's also the draft for that. I'm fine with it, though. You know, Bill Belichick investing in special teams typically goes pretty well. So I'm going to let him rock there. I'm going to let him cook.
Yeah, again, don't hate the player, hate the contract, that type of thing, yeah. That cliche. Like, I don't see the need for that much money for a guy that's going to get out there maybe a handful of times, but maybe they see a role for him in the linebacking core and maybe he'll surprise you there, but you're kind of in wait and see mode there as well.
Yep. And then after that, a couple AFC East guys switch homes, as we've seen a lot this offseason. Mike Gesicki comes to the Patriots for a year and $4.5 million. With a 3.55 guaranteed and a max of $9 million in incentives. Just shows with the Dalton Schultz signing that the tight end market is pretty dead. Yeah. So a lot of these guys are going for a one-year reset probably. Gesicki might be one of them. I like Mike Gesicki. He's not a world beater, but I think he's solid. I think the contract is cheap. And it's a better option at tight end than Jonnu Smith. I have nothing to complain about in that regard. And James Robinson is a 24-year-old running back that you got for $4 million a year max. So I can't really complain about that either. Damien Harris was not going to stay. He's a Bill. Can't believe he's getting $1.7
million. Yeah, contract-wise, I'm shocked. Mm-hmm.
Like, I guess the running back market is dead too, as Austin Eckler was talking about. And pretty bizarre, but I like both of these signings. I have zero complaints about either of these signings.
I'm just going to be a stickler for this one because I like Mike Gesicki. I like the player. I don't hate it. Yeah, I know the eye roll and everything. I like the Gesicki move until I saw, we talked about this the other day, and you just brought him up, until I saw the Dalton Schultz contract, and he gets $9 million, I think, exactly, and then Mike Gesicki gets a max contract potentially of $9 million with incentives. That's obviously the difference there. He's going to get it in incentives. Schultz is going to get it, I think, guaranteed, or you know, maybe
I think Schultz
incentives
is,
there. But
Schultz is the de facto number one, too.
Fair enough, yep.
Is more appealing to him. Mm-hmm. I don't think Brevin Jordan is really going to challenge for that role.
Fair enough, yep.
They have some depth guys there. But,
yeah, like I said, I like just being moves. A stickler, I don't hate either one of them. The James Robinson move makes some sense. I mean, James Robinson, a guy that has had some injury histories, you know, didn't really do anything when he got traded to the Jets last year. Everyone thought he was going to take over for Breece Hall.
They just didn't really use him.
Yeah, that's what I
miraculous injury recovery in recent memory. Or was it him or him and Cam Akers who came back like 5 months after a torn Achilles or something?
Akers came back to play in the Super Bowl that year.
Didn't
so Robinson, yeah, probably right around similar. That time level. And then yeah, Robinson tore his Achilles in week, I think, 17 of last year, and then played week one of this year. And
yeah,
that was the thing. That's bizarre. That's what gives me hope about him. Is I mean, he was excellent those first five games until, you know, ETN kind of took over the role, and then obviously he fell out of favor in Jacksonville, and then again never could get anything going in New York, it seemed like. But he is 2 years younger than Damian Harris. Obviously, Harris had some injury problems last year for the Patriots. So, like you said, the writing is kind of on the wall there. Again, I don't hate the move in the slightest. I think, you know, he'll be a good fit here. The Patriots will probably figure out a way to use him pretty well. Again, Gesicki, like I said, I don't hate that move either, just to be a stickler with the whole Schultz stuff. Yeah. And it makes sense. The Field Yates tweet that stood out to me, Mike Gesicki was recruited by Bill O'Brien to play his college ball at Penn State. Now they're reunited in New England. So obviously Bill O'Brien probably had a say in this move. I liked it. Obviously the Patriots are giving him more autonomy to, you know, make some of these offensive calls if that was the case. And Gesicki, again, not the best season last year for Miami. You know, his numbers were down, but did have five touchdowns. Was a big red zone threat for them. As long as he is not greedying at all at the Patriots, you know, when he scores a touchdown with them.
Him and Mac Jones is going to do the Yankee Doodle Dandy. And then, Mike Gesicki is going to do whatever his gritty is.
Patriots got a big dance team, though, now this year with Gesicki, Mac Jones, bringing in Juju last week. Yep. I don't know if James Robinson has anything he wants to pull out, but
I don't think Juju is going to do TikToks on the field as a Patriot.
I can't imagine that would fly. Yeah, that's not going to be good. But yeah, like you said, just to kind of wrap up my spiel, I like both moves. I think they're obviously, you know, I'm glad the Patriots are trying. You know, obviously last week talking about them, you know, we said the Juju move was kind of a move sideways. Obviously, you get an upgrade in tight end with Gesicki, like you said, over Jonnu Smith. That goes without saying. And again, James Robinson's the interesting one. Is he an upgrade over Damian Harris? Maybe on paper, yes. Maybe on paper, no, depending on how you look at the player. But I'm excited to see what he can do in a Patriots uniform. Obviously, you get him for, I think, what was it, 2 years instead of one for Harris. Yeah. I'll take that.
He's a better passing option than Harris. And he is a safety blanket in case Strong and Harris, Kevin Harris. You don't have to worry about having two Harrises now, are not quite up to snuff, which is possible for young running backs. As James Robinson still is, he's 24 years old. He's younger than me, which is kind of astonishing to say.
That is wild, right?
Yeah. One last Patriot note, though. It doesn't look like DeAndre Hopkins is going to be a Patriot. Sadly.
Yeah, we did get some breaking news finally on the show. This was from like 5 minutes ago from our good old Dov Kleeman.
The guy that isn't a real person.
Yep. But yeah, just to kind of, I was trying to throw that in here as you were starting the football segment. The initial tweet from him, just to go off, it was update: the Cardinals will not be able to get their initial asking price of a second round pick and another asset in a trade for wide receiver DeAndre Hopkins per Albert Breer. He thinks it'll be closer to the Cowboys Brandon Cooks trade of a fifth and a sixth round pick. And then Kleeman quote tweeted his own tweet 17 minutes ago saying update: DeAndre Hopkins isn't a quote unquote consideration for the Patriots at this point, according to Albert Breer. God damn it. Pardon my French. Why the F will the Patriots not go after DeAndre Hopkins? Like, they are fully content with the wide receivers they have right now. And it's very aggravating to me.
Yeah. This one's confusing. I was expecting this saga to end in Hopkins going somewhere for like a second and a fourth. Mm-hmm. It'll be like, we didn't want to pay that.
That would make sense. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
This is not okay. This is bizarre. But it's also not – I've always had the thought in the back of my mind, maybe he doesn't want to play for Bill O'Brien. Still, there'd have to be contract restructuring to make it work here. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe just
– You know how that becomes more available, though, with the whole contract stuff? You don't give two special teamers a combined potentially $13-plus million.
Well, yes.
And you have more cap space.
I imagine they did this with – they made those moves with not having DeAndre Hopkins to restructure.
Fair enough. All right. I see your point there. But, like, again, it's just maddening of what you prioritize. You're prioritizing special teamers over de facto number one.
I don't even think it's fully necessarily prioritizing. I think it's just accepting fate.
Okay, fair enough.
But, you know, you could look at it different ways. I have to imagine, although Judy is going to be more expensive, this might take them a little bit out of the running for Jerry Jeudy too. If they're not willing to give this up for DeAndre Hopkins, unless the Bill O'Brien stuff is prohibiting this more so than we know, I can't.
Which I hope not. Like,
up to give up more
for Jerry
Jeudy. Mm-hmm. He's a former first round pick, knows O'Brien, younger, more upside at this point in his career. I just have a feeling that they're just going to draft a receiver in like the second round or something and go from there. Mm-hmm. I don't see them bringing in Jerry Jeudy either, but shall we get to some notes from around the league?
Sure. One last thing on Hopkins, because I said this to you, I said this to a buddy of mine. We've kind of been monitoring the situation. He was actually the one that sent me right before we jumped on. It was a screenshot of that tweet. So shout out to Justin if he's listening. But we talked about it after Juju obviously signed with the Patriots. Of course, we'll get into it with the Jets taking Mecole Hardman from the Chiefs. The price tag keeps dropping on DeAndre Hopkins, and I don't know what Patrick Mahomes has to throw to in Kansas City anymore. Like, what do the Chiefs care if they give up a – again, this is all just speculation, but, like, if I'm the Chiefs and I don't have a lot of weapons right now, unless we want to draft somebody, I'd be calling up Arizona saying, hey, we'll give you a fourth and a fifth because we don't care. We're the Chiefs. We'll throw picks away for DeAndre Hopkins and then kind of pair him with Mahomes, and if they can make that money work, and Kelsey and everybody. And that would scare the shit out of me as, you know, just – a Patriots fan, a football fan, because that would be a deadly trio. But again, just speculation, just some thoughts of, you know, a landing spot that I think would make some sense if the Chiefs could make that work. And especially if it's not going to cost a ton, which it doesn't seem to be the case anymore.
Yeah, and I was just checking too. The Chiefs do have a pick in every single round, including multiple sixths, sevenths, and fourths. So they have...
Sure, there you go. Throw a couple of fourths. Throw a seventh at them if you want to do that. Maybe a couple of fourths and a sixth. Like, they don't care.
If this happens, I blame you. So just prepare yourself.
You know, I'll knock on wood, but blame the Patriots for... Clearly, like, Bill Belichick likes the guy. Clearly, DeAndre Hopkins likes Bill Belichick. Like, don't be sticklers. Make this work. Give up a fourth round pick, for Christ's sake.
I really hope so. Let's get into some stuff around the league. We talked about Damian Harris. We're starting with the Bills, though. Trent Sherfield maybe sent a shot at Tua in the media. Saying, like,
did he? I did not see that.
Wanted
fill me
to
in.
Play for, like, an elite quarterback.
It's like, that's 100% a shot, absolutely.
Going there to, like, play for an elite quarterback. I don't have the exact quote, but not a direct shot at Tua, but, like, he referred to, like, playing for an elite quarterback. I have to
throw a ricochet shot at him.
He's like, you know, Josh. I'm not going to say it, but, like, Josh Allen better than Tua. So that was interesting. They also locked up David Questenberry, good veteran lineman, staying in the division. Braxton Berrios, thought of as a potential Patriots reunion, wouldn't have hated it at this money, but it's okay. He goes to the Dolphins. Makes sense. Guys like Thirst Trap, king of the NFL, goes to Miami. I'm sure he'll do well down there.
He'll be fine down there, yep.
$3.5 million and $3 million guaranteed. Jake Bailey. Caught some attention too, kind of blaming the Patriots like conditioning staff recently. Whatever.
Everyone just hates everybody all of a sudden.
I guess. Deshaun Elliott's a nice depth pickup. Malik Reed, Eric Saubert, Dan Feeney, and Nick Needham was re-signed. Decent lateral moves, you know, depth for the Dolphins. Thomas Morstead, speaking of guys, moving from one AFC East team to the other, the Dolphins punter, Thomas Morstead, goes to the Jets. Solomon Thomas, guy trying to salvage something as a former third overall pick that hasn't really panned out, goes there. And Mecole Hardman signs a one-year, $6.5 million deal, real cheap, real affordable. With the Jets, have to imagine the pending Aaron Rodgers deal had to factor into his decision to sign with the Jets, which I don't really understand why the Aaron Rodgers deal hasn't happened, but I have a guess. He's holding it up because he is a weirdo. So
that's a hot take right there. I would have never thought Aaron Rodgers was any sort of weird or anything like that. Like
the good thing is though, his family doesn't hate him, so at least he's not like a weirdo.
That's true. We can
relationship with his family. We can rule that out.
He's always got them in his corner, 100%.
There's no like family interference here or anything.
No. I'm with you too. That is a weird situation. I feel
like it's really just the Jets making noise here, besides the Harris move. So,
yeah, like you keyed into it earlier. The Harris, not a surprise he goes elsewhere, especially after the Patriots get James Robinson. I think like we talked about, the writing was kind of on the wall there with Harris, especially with the ascension of Ramondre Stevenson. The money, like you said earlier, is absolutely insane that he only gets $1.7 million. Like you said though, basically a tryout for next offseason to be a free agent again. Dolphins, I think you summed it up perfectly. All a lot of lateral moves. Berrios, a nice addition to go with obviously Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle, and give Tua another fast receiver. The Jets, like you said, Mecole Hardman, obviously it's a gear up towards for Rodgers. When that will come, who the hell knows? Are the Packers still asking for a ton in return? What is going on behind the scenes? Who knows? But like you said, it is Rodgers. It's a weird situation. Wouldn't put it past him if he just kind of threw a team out there just to maybe put some pressure on the Packers, and maybe there was never a trade in the process at all, because he is a weird guy.
Yeah, he's definitely weird.
Could you imagine if he goes back to the Packers though? Like after all this, he's just like, I'm gonna
happen.
No, you don't think so?
No, okay. I think it's done 100% there, but I mean that would be classic. But
you would think a deal again. Sorry to keep harping on this, but like again, I was talking to my friend the other day about this, and we're like, you would think like first round pick, give him Zach Wilson because obviously he's not going to be needed if Aaron Rodgers is there. Go out and get some other guy in the draft if you're the Jets to replace him, or bring in some other maybe young free agent. A first, him, maybe something else like that. I feel like that should be enough to get this deal done. Like, you're not going to need the player. You're definitely not going to need the pick if you have Aaron Rodgers. Like, I don't get what the holdup is, but it, like you said, it's probably Rodgers holding it up.
Yeah, he's not known for being normal, so
no.
He's probably doing some goofy shit. The AFC North a little bit. How about that? The Baltimore Ravens really haven't done much lately. Lamar Jackson might be on the way out, but
Yeah, how are you feeling about your prediction?
Which prediction?
The one you thought, I think I asked you what would the outcome, and you said that he would return to, you think a deal would finally, would get done at some point with Baltimore. Are you still high on that one?
Nope.
All right, fair enough.
I've changed my mind.
Fully jumped ship on that one. Okay, good. I'm glad, because like the writing, again, was on the wall of that one. Like he said it last week, like the Ravens hate their quarterbacks, it seems like, so.
Yeah, there's reports now that say they're potentially moving on. Makes sense, I guess, but I don't know. I thought they would finally just nut up and freaking get something done, but guaranteed money is a stickler, especially when you're negotiating with a guy representing himself.
Kevin Mullen resigned
for the Ravens. Geno Stone resigned as well, just some depth moves. A guy wanted the Patriots to sign goes to the Bengals. Orlando Brown, 26 years old, signs a reasonable 4 year, $64.092 million contract, with a $31 million signing bonus. Sucks. I mean, we've seen the Bengals invest so much in their line in the past year, and now they get the big fish on the market. And in turn, Jonah Williams reasonably wants a trade due to the logjam there. Wouldn't hate him on the Patriots for the right pick, to be honest with you.
I would too. Again, I think it's going to come down to money though. Like you got to extend him. Do the Patriots want to do that?
Yeah. I don't know.
Who knows?
Cody Ford is a shrewd addition. I like Cody Ford. He's young too. Nick Scott, pretty underrated safety, not like a superstar or anything, but I like that. I like what the Bengals are doing this past week. The Cleveland Browns made a trade today. They acquired Elijah Moore. I wonder if Denzel Mims, who also requested a trade, is next to be moved out for the Jets. They acquire Elijah Moore from the Jets for pick 52, along with pick 74 going to them with Elijah Moore. I explained that terribly. I should have said
it's okay.
Elijah Moore
got the
pick
idea.
74
yep.
to the Browns for pick 42. Pretty fair trade. I don't really think
I'd say so,
for either side. And if the Browns can find a way to get Anthony Schwartz involved, they drafted a few years ago, they have two pretty scrappy, very fast receivers in their receiver core, and Moore and Schwartz. So I would like to see that. That would be fun to watch in their offense. Jordan Akins signed for depth at tight end. Juan Thornhill, pretty nice value for him.
Good pickup, yeah.
Yeah, he leaves the Chiefs for the Browns. 3 years, 21 and $14 million guaranteed. Sione Takitaki, did not know that was a real person, re-signed. They signed Josh Dobbs to replace Jacoby Brissett and brought back Anthony Walker today. For the Steelers, they bring in Nate Herbig, who I don't know who that is, from the Jets. He's a guard. Isaac Seumalo, another guard. Definitely needs some O-line depth, so I like this for them. Seumalo, 3 years, $24 million. He got paid. They are loving linebackers this offseason. We talked last week. They add a former Patriot and Dolphin and Landon Roberts to a two-year deal. And James Pierre on a one-year deal. How do we feel about what's going on in the AFC North?
Oh, it seems like all solid moves for the Browns. Obviously, you get a receiver that it seemed like, you know, was not 1 foot out the door. Kind of the case, though. Obviously, we talked about it last year, maybe a little bit in passing. You know, Moore's displeasure with the Jets, a guy that seems like he just, you know, wanted a new start, gets that in Cleveland, and like you said, probably a good fit for him. The Thornhill deal is a sneaky good one for a Browns team. You know, secondary could use a little bit of help. Pretty solid player for the Chiefs. Obviously, plenty of playoff experience there. Pittsburgh, like you said, loading up on linebackers. Obviously, that defense makes sense there. And then Cincinnati, obviously, getting the big fish in Orlando Brown. I'm with you. Would have loved him on the Patriots. We talked about that last week. But Cincinnati, we've seen it the last couple of seasons. They're still trying to, you know, get that revolving door shut of offensive linemen and, you know, protecting Joe Burrow. So hopefully that's 1 foot, a step in the right direction there.
Yeah.
And then the Ravens are doing nothing. Like, I don't know what their team is anymore. Like, we crap on them for obviously the Lamar Jackson stuff. But
you're wrong. They hosted Nelson Aguilar.
Oh, that's right. If I was Lamar Jackson, I'd be like, get me the fuck out of here. Like,
that's it.
We need receivers. I get you're going after a receiver, but like, get me a guy that can catch the football, please. Like,
yeah.
It was bizarre. Who was the receiver too that was calling him out? He was this week or last week. Was it Bateman? Was crap talking him too, I think, about their training facility maybe, or their team doctors or whatever. So it's a full shitstorm in Baltimore. Like, I don't know what's going on with that team. It seems like there's just an internal revolt going on. So it'd be interesting to see how that
doesn't end up there.
Yeah, that would suck.
I don't want to have to deal with that.
No, that would not be fun.
Yeah. On to the AFC South. The Texans add a couple running backs, Mike Boone and Devin Singletary. Laremy Tunsil becomes the highest paid offensive tackle in the league for the second time. Negotiating a 3-year, $75 million deal for himself, including $50 million $50 million guaranteed. Don't know what his academic background is, but it must be pretty good if he fucking negotiated a deal like this for himself.
Yep.
He must have paid attention in school.
Absolutely.
Hit the books hard. Hassan Ridgeway for a 1-year deal. Tavier Thomas, MJ Stewart, re-signed to a 2-year deal. Dalton Schultz, bargain bin shopping, $9 million for a 1-year deal for him. And Corey Littleton and Denzel Perryman signed two cheap deals to shore up the linebacker core. Okay for the Texans. You know, they're making some noise, though. They're making some strides to be better.
Kind of a sneaky good offseason, I feel like.
Yeah,
maybe not the flashiest names, other than, like, obviously Schultz is a big name. Singletary with the Bills, of course. Like,
yep.
They're making – I'll give them credit. I said it last week. It's kind of sad that they're making more moves than, like, a team like the Patriots. But, hey, they're trying to improve, it looks like. Obviously, they're going to get –
I'm just talking with you.
I know, but like, just again, scoreboard. They've signed more guys, it seems like, than the Patriots have. So they're obviously trying to build towards something. Going to get a pretty good quarterback with their pick. Texans, they're going to be years away, a couple years away, but at least they're, you know, again, step in the right direction type of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Out goes Matt Ryan, in goes Gardner Minshew in Indy for a 1-year deal. Ashton Doolin re-signed for two. Tyquan Lewis on a 1-year deal to shore up the edge rusher position a little bit. Isaiah McKenzie, another guy I would have liked on the Patriots.
Yep.
He signs with the Colts, and EJ Speed at linebacker for the Jaguars. We get Trey Herndon sticking around, and Andrew Wingard, so shoring up the secondary. He was re-signed to a 3-year, $9.6 million deal. And for the Titans, Nick Westbrook-Ikhine was retained. You know, this is a team that lost Robert Woods. Might trade Derrick Henry. Daniel Brunskill was signed from the 49ers. Arden Key picked up from the Jaguars. Arden Key's pretty underrated, I think. I like this deal for them. And Sean Murphy Bunting, another guy I would have liked to come to the Patriots, signs a one-year deal with the Titans. And how do we feel about the AFC South outside of the Texans who we just talked about? Nothing super crazy, but you know, teams are making some solid moves, I think.
Yeah, nothing too insane. The only thing I was going to say about the Colts stuff, you got to think Miles Bryant was jumping for joy when he found out Isaiah McKenzie wasn't going to be in the division anymore, wouldn't have to face him two times a year. But, of course, they do play the Colts this season, so maybe Isaiah McKenzie will continue to wreak havoc on the Patriots a little bit when the Colts come to town. I think the Patriots are home. And then the Sean Murphy Bunting move, a nice move for the Titans with some question marks, of course, moving forward. What their future is going to look like, they get a decent corner to at least shore up one position on that team.
Yeah. Agreed. On to the AFC West. The Broncos sign Tre'Mon Smith and Riley Dixon. The Chiefs sign guard Nick Allegretti, a guard I don't know about at all. Tershawn Wharton was signed to a one-year deal as well. Mike Edwards, another shrewd little one-year deal poking around out there. He signs with the Chiefs from the Bucs, 1 year, $3 million with a max value of $5 million. Derek Nnadi was retained on the D-line. Jakob Johnson retained by the Raiders. Brandon Parker and Jerry Tillery were re-signed. Jerry Tillery, nice little value deal for them there. I think that's pretty cheap money. Robert Spillane from the Steelers goes to the Raiders. O.J. Howard signed. Maybe he can, you know, finally find a landing spot where he succeeds. Cam Sims, Jaquan Johnson were like for them, and Jermaine Illuminor to round it out for them. Donald Parham Jr. looked like he might have been leaving the Chargers, but he signs a two-year deal to stick around there. Morgan Fox sticks around for 2 years as well. And so does Trey Pipkins on a multi-year deal. How do we feel about the AFC West and the moves they've made?
Not a ton of big ones. I mean, like you said, just a lot of reshoring up for a lot of these teams. Obviously, Chiefs replaced Thornhill with Mike Edwards. Seems like a nice move there. The Raiders continue to try to add to their team. Obviously, they got a lot to, maybe not a lot to prove, but obviously, again, some questions going into the season. They sure up a couple of positions here and there. Chargers, I feel like at least for me, I'm just waiting to see if they end up moving Eckler. So that's kind of where I'm at with them.
Oh, they will.
It seems like it. And again, definitely a guy if I were the Patriots, I'd be going after. But maybe now with James Robinson on the roster, that dream is dead. But again, I'd like the player. I'd like him here. They also won't pay him exactly. So yeah, not a ton going on in this division compared to other ones, but some solid moves from a couple of teams.
Yep, I agree. Brandon Cooks. Now onto the NFC Beast. Acquired from the Texans, fourth time he's been traded in his career. He goes for a 2023 fifth and a 2024 sixth. Nice little deal for the Cowboys. Cooper Rush is retained. Potentially steal Dak Prescott's job when he inevitably sucks for part of the season. Ronald Jones, little Zeke reassurance with him looking like a post-June 1st release. And Dante Fowler retained as well. Paris Campbell to the Giants, 1 year, $4.7 million. I like that if he can stay healthy. And for him, maybe maximizing his value to hit the market next summer. Darius Slayton, 2 years, $12 million. One of the low-key better deep threats out there. I like that for them. Decent money for him as well. And Raheem Nunez-Roches, former Super Bowl champion with the Bucs, signs with the Giants as well. Marcus Mariota goes from Atlanta to Philly, from one bird to another. He signed
nice little upgrade deal there.
Yeah, I'd say so. Darius Slay, after getting released, re-signs for 3 years and $42 million through 2025 with $23 million guaranteed. I also like the pickup of Greedy Williams. Kind of thought the Browns would keep him around. It hasn't been great, but he's got some upside and he's young. Nicholas Morrow, they've lost a lot of the linebacker position, so that makes sense to show that up. And Justin Evans from the Saints. For the Commanders, they signed Tyler Larson to keep him around. Abdullah Anderson, F.A. Obada, Cody Barton, who I like from the Seahawks. David Mayo was re-signed, and Danny Johnson was re-signed. How do we feel about the NFC Beast? Outside of Darius Slay, doesn't really feel like anything crazy outside of the receiver moves, really.
No, yeah. I mean, the Cooks moves are obviously the biggest one on paper. The Eagles, good to see them. Obviously, like you said, they lost a decent amount of the talent this offseason. Good to see them keep Slay, because that's obviously a huge part of that defense. I'm with you, Greedy Williams. A nice pickup there. Nicholas Morrow, same thing. Reassuring a linebacker position. As you said, it's been hit pretty hard. I was talking about it the other day. I don't know how much or what the, because I know the Cowboys restructured Cooks' contract, but like, if I were the Cowboys, I think I like Brandon Cooks, don't get me wrong, but like, and especially after you saw what Schultz signed for, like, I feel like, at least to me, I would have just kept Dalton Schultz around and maybe, you know, tried to find a cheaper receiver. Like, maybe that's just me. Like, I would rather have the big bad tight end over another wide receiver when you already have CeeDee Lamb and Michael Gallup. But, you know, three pretty good receivers, I guess the Cowboys will take. It'd be interesting to see, you know, how that works out, that dynamic with a pretty good receiver room. Other than that, you, like you said, nothing too crazy in this one either.
Yeah, nothing super noteworthy. On to the Chicago Bears, they signed P.J. Walker and Deontay Foreman from the Panthers, Travis Homer to a two-year deal, Robert Tonyan, I believe that was a one-year deal, Nate Davis for 3 years, got to shore up that offensive line for Justin Fields. He leaves the Titans for the Bears, and Andrew Billings from the Raiders. C.J. Gardner-Johnson, another guy I would have liked for the Patriots, signs a one-year $8 million deal with $6.5 million guaranteed. C.J. Moore, another guy I honestly expected the Patriots to pluck out of Detroit for his special teams prowess. He signs for 2 years and $4.5 million with $3 million guaranteed and $1.25 million in incentives. Emmanuel Mosley goes from the 49ers to Detroit. Will Harris resigns, and Michael Badgley resigns. Packers still waiting on that Rodgers move. They re-signed Rudy Ford. That's it for them. The Vikings keep Nick Mullins around for 2 years, keep Alexander Mattison around for 2 years, finally lock up Garrett Bradbury, the heart of their offensive line in the middle there at the center position, 3 years, 15.75. They plucked Dean Lowry out of Green Bay, signed him for 2 years and $8.5 million, and also re-signed their kicker like the Lions did, bring back Greg Joseph. How do we feel about the NFC North?
A couple of good moves. I like the Foreman move for Chicago. Obviously, it looks like they're going to give the reins to Khalil Herbert to be the starter. So Foreman's a decent, solid.
I think it's a committee.
You think so? Back and forth? Okay.
Herbert being the primary starter, but yeah.
I was going to say. Good 1-2 punch.
We talked about last year. He has a great game, then he has a bad game.
Oh, I know. My fantasy team did not enjoy that all that much when I had to rely on him late in the season. And, you know, the weeks you don't start him, he goes off. The weeks you do start him, proceeds to go for 9 yards and fumble in the end zone. So not great there. Travis Homer's a sneaky good pickup too. You know, a guy went healthy, has shown some stuff before. Obviously Robert Tonyan gives Fields a decent weapon to throw to. Like you said, they sure up their line with Nate Davis, get some protection there as well. I like the CJ Gardner-Johnson move for Detroit. That gives him obviously a guy that, you know, has won a little bit, has had some playoff experiences, obviously, as the Lions try to get there, and a good solid veteran option. Packers, we talked about it. They're in limbo, basically, like you said, waiting on Rodgers. And then the Vikings kind of just reassuring some guys. The Madison move's obviously a big one with, you know, you never really know about Dalvin Cook's injury history and his health. Like, Madison's a guy that's had plenty of success there. Smart for them to bring him back.
Yeah, I mean, we're at the stage where, like, a lot of the big stuff happened, but, you know, teams are making some moves, so.
Yep.
We'll see what continues to happen there. We're waiting for the big one with Aaron Rodgers. Matt Collins goes from the Raiders to the Falcons, along with Lorenzo Carter. He re-signs there. Bradley Pinion signs a three-year deal to stay there. And Mike Hughes, I like Mike Hughes. It's a good pickup for them. Adam Thielen, one of the bigger free agent names
at the receiver
position, goes to the Panthers, who he believes can't compete for a Super Bowl. That's weird. Miles Sanders,
I'll give you a division title, but I don't know if I'd give you a Super Bowl.
No. Miles Sanders, 4 years, 5.4 with 13 guaranteed. Hayden Hurst also gets 13 guaranteed on 3 years at 21.75. Justin McCray for some guard depth. Bradley Bozeman, who they brought in from Baltimore last year, gets awarded with a 3 year, $18 million extension. Deshaun Williams from the Broncos goes to Carolina as well. Michael Thomas signs for 1 year and $10 million with a max of 15. Tano Passignon, I have no idea how to say that. 2 years, $6 million with $2.5 million guaranteed. JT Gray on a 3 year deal. Storm Norton from the Chargers for some line depth. And Lonnie Johnson Jr. most recently from the Titans. The Buccaneers, quiet week. They're just kind of losing guys, really. Bring in Chase Edmonds and Greg Gaines. How do we feel about the lowly NFC South?
Yeah, I was going to say, they're, I mean, the Panthers, Yeah, that was going to be my main takeaway. The Panthers, I think I said it last week, kind of smell blood in the water with this division seemingly wide open. I like the moves they made. I think it was a surprise Thielen ends up going there. And like I said, Super Bowl contender, I don't think so. Maybe that was, I don't know, a shot at the Vikings that he goes from a better off team. He thinks the Panthers, he's going to be in better shape than he was with the Vikings. Who knows? Obviously, we talked about it last week when they both signed off. This was just, you know, freeing up some numbers and stuff. Sanders liked that move for the Panthers as well. Hayden Hurst, you know, maybe not the flashiest tight end name, but a guy that's pretty reliable. So good moves from Carolina. Other than that, like, housekeeping stuff for the Saints, they're kind of, again, in limbo with that team. The Falcons don't really know what they're going to do. And then the Buccaneers, like, obviously no Brady. You have no idea what that team's going to look like this season with Baker at the helm. But I guess, you know, Chase Edmonds, a guy, has had some success here and there, you know, decent little pickup there. But other than that, like, not a ton going on. Like you said, a division that is, once again, probably going to be the worst in football.
Yeah, that feels weird when the, you know, AFC South definitely exists, but the AFC South a little bit on the upswing, even though, you know, Titans have been getting rid of everybody, and that division is still has the Houston Texans in it. So
that's true. Yeah, I may have misstepped there.
It wasn't even like to dispute your point. It's just more like,
no, I got you. Yep. Weird, yeah.
To say that, but on to the last division of the football segment here today. Corey Clement goes to the NFC West to play for the Cardinals. Former Patriot Yelda Froholt goes to the Cardinals as well on a 2-year deal. Will Hernandez re-ups with them for two by nine, little guard and center depth for them. Zach Pascal, sneaky little 2-year deal. I think he could do well there.
Yeah, good signing there.
The ball, definitely better than Robbie Anderson.
Absolutely.
The Rams have signed Coleman Shelton, and that is it. I can't imagine they have much cap space, if at all. The 49ers give Kevin Givens an extension plus Ty McGill. Demetrius Flanagan Fowles was re-signed to a 1-year deal. Isaiah Oliver signed with San Francisco. Miles Hardfield. Cleveland Farrell, see if he can kind of revive his career, high draft pick a few years ago. Has a cheap 1-year deal, plus John Feliciano and Isaiah Oliver. And to round it out, the Seahawks re-signed Drew Lock, 1-year, $4 million, max value of $7.5 million. Signed Evan Brown from the Lions, Devin Bush from the Steelers. I like that. If he can bounce back, he's a good young linebacker that just didn't really have a great year this past year with the Steelers. And then Julian Love. I like Julian Love for them from the Giants a lot. So a little bit going on in the NFC West, but like I said, we're kind of in that stage where it's just kind of teams filling some smaller holes for the most part.
Yeah, minor moves here and there. I'm with you. I like the last two moves you mentioned for the Seahawks, Bush and Love. 49ers kind of in the same boat. The Eagles, where we talked about them last week, now they're just kind of, like you said, refilling most of the positions they lost a decent amount from. I would have liked to have seen, or maybe go and look at it later, like that Shelton guy has to be making about $900,000, because like you said, the Rams have like nothing for cap space. So I'm curious to see what he ended up getting paid to re-sign with them. And then the Cardinals, I hate using the, you know, the phrase they're in limbo, because I've used it a ton, but like with no Kyler Murray to start the season, you don't really know what that team's going to look like. They were bad last year with them. Pascal's a nice move, like you said. I forgot Froholt even still played football. I thought he was one of those guys who just kind of disappeared into, you know, the abyss. But some decent moves for them, for a team, again, that's kind of got a pretty big question mark moving forward of what they're going to look like this season.
Yeah. We're just waiting and seeing. I think a lot of teams are just plugging holes and preparing for the draft. And
it's just going to say, this is, I feel like, the time where it's like, all right, these teams maybe are more focused towards getting their draft boards ready than maybe trying to scoop out some bottom of the barrel free agents that might be still left.
Especially with the trade we had with the Panthers and the Bears, some teams are shuffling around. True. Yep. Maybe some teams trying to move up or down in that top 10. We'll see. That's going to wrap it up for episode 135 here again for you on this lovely Wednesday night. Thank you so much for listening. You can find us wherever you find your podcasts. You can find us on Twitter at @Mike_Karate, @Ryan_Savaggio, and at the show at Silent Karate Pod. I'm excited for the hockey and more basketball tomorrow. The national tournament for hockey starts tomorrow. Go Merrimack on Friday. Yep. What else? Anything else? Just Bruins and Celtics. We'll see what happens with them. You can find us on TikTok. If you throw our name into the search bar, maybe we'll post something. Maybe we won't. Maybe I'll do a little NCAA hockey bracket explanation.
There you go.
Mine will be bad because mine is never good in NCAA hockey. But
just go all Merrimack bias.
I am picking Quinnipiac over Merrimack because because I'm trying to jinx them. So
Okay, you're taking my route. I like it.
Yep. Going for the jinx. I think Quinnipiac is having trouble sleeping. Nobody wants to play Merrimack. Nobody wants to play a team playing for this like Merrimack. Scrappy team back in the tournament after a long time. We'll see what happens. Hopefully we'll be talking about a win a little bit and congratulating the fellas. But we'll see you next week. Thank you so much for listening. Stay safe, stay healthy, be nice to people, all that good stuff. And we will talk to you next week. Peace out.